All right, here we are, Lawyer Talk Podcast. You can check us out at lawyertalkpodcast.com, where you can catch the whole backlog of episodes. You can link to the socials. Do whatever you're going to do. Lots of comments coming these days. Love it. Keep them coming. I'll address them as I can. Today, I got Scott Shepard. This is our continuing, I guess what I'll call my guest series, for lack of a better way to put it. But Scott Shepard is, I work with him almost daily. He's my private investigator. I don't want to say mine, but he is a private investigator. But a lot more than that, and we're gonna dig into that here shortly. Scott, just go ahead and introduce yourself. Tell us about your company.
Yeah, Scott Shepard. I own a company called Justified Investigations. I started about 5 years ago, focusing primarily on criminal defense investigations, as you well know. Also work on civil litigation cases for civil attorneys who do wrongful death, car crashes, things like that.
Yeah. So I'm thinking like Sam Spade. I don't even know if you know who these people are. Sam Spade, that'd be Humphrey Bogart in the Maltese Falcon.
No, don't know that one.
Mickey Spillane's, Mike Hammer. What's the Jack Nicholson movie? Anyway, there's lots of like TV gumshoers that we think about when you think investigators.
Sure.
Maybe some of that's real life. Maybe some of that's not.
It's never that exciting.
No. Lots of is it lots of following people around to see if they're cheating on their wives or husbands?
So early on, when I first started and I was trying to figure out how to make this thing work, I started in the insurance world. So workers' compensation, somebody says they hurt their back, they can't work.
And then they're on a ladder painting their
house. And you go do surveillance and they're riding a four-wheeler across their lot. So a lot of surveillance initially. I got out of that as quick as possible because it was a real time drain. You can't do anything else. You've got to watch.
I guess that's true. You're just sitting around.
Yeah.
And I'm always picturing in the movies like some private investigator sitting in like an upstairs office with their letters or the names stenciled on the glass door, the frosted glass door, and, you know, the old school secretary out front.
Yeah.
It's not really like that.
It's not like that. I have no secretary.
And then somebody knocks on a door. It's like a sultry woman that walks in.
No. I currently work out of my basement, so there's no stenciling on the wall. There is no secretary. I am the timekeeper, the bookkeeper, the investigator, all of it.
Yeah. So for my part, I mean, for those who don't know, I'm sure you all know because you're all following me up at Palmer Legal Defense that I do criminal defense work for the last 31 years, almost exclusive. I do some other stuff. I dilly-dally, but mostly it's criminal defense. And when I first started out, I didn't realize – I guess in my head, I didn't know what to even do with a private investigator. That would have been a luxury back in those days. But if you think about it, when I think about what really is going on in a criminal case, you have the government side of the case. And typically the government's had the case for what? Months at times, even years.
Yeah, sometimes longer.
And what are they doing with it? I'm going to throw you some softballs here. What are they doing with the case?
Well, obviously when it starts out, law enforcement has it.
And they're investigating.
An allegation has been made, and they investigate it, and they have a ton of resources. And once they're done with their part, they pass it on to the court or to the prosecutor, who then justifies all those allegations with the evidence that's been gathered by police.
Yep.
At that point, generally, a criminal defense attorney gets involved, and they get this heaping mound of discovery, and they have to go through it in order to understand the case. I think the problem is that that's not fair. Some attorneys don't. They understand the case at a surface level, and they run with it.
Yeah, I'm going to say many.
Okay.
I mean, look, after 30, and I mean this, and it used to be me, you know, we would get, so there's been this controversy. This is even before your time, but I've done a couple shows here on the Ohio discovery rules, and pre-2010, I used to get nothing.
Really?
I would get nothing. I would get not even a police report. So now we get a big narrative report. Yeah. That says on such and such a date at such and such a time, I received a call from this person. And it just, we get the whole ROA or record of activity.
Absolutely.
And I can review what the cops did. And I think in a lot of ways, I don't know if that has spoiled us here. On the other hand, we should get that. Like, I'm not saying we're not entitled to it. But before 2010, when we got a case, you would get like a piece of paper that's almost completely redacted or whited out.
Absolutely.
With in the middle paragraph or in the middle of the page, it would say, I interviewed the defendant and the defendant said, blah, 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 blah. And then another big blacked out section. We didn't get witness statements. I didn't even get the full report record of activity. Everybody hates this. The followers hate it. People think I'm an idiot. They think that's never been that way. That would violate all the discovery rules. Well, in 2010, they changed it. But pre-2010, if we didn't do our own investigation, we didn't get anything. We got names of witnesses and a lot of times not even addresses,
right?
Just names. And we would have to sort it all out. And that I quickly learned to rely on people like you to help me. And you have a police background too, right?
I do. Yep. Prior law enforcement, corporate security, and then started my business, like I said, 5 years ago.
But that gives you, and the reason I brought that up is it gives you an edge. When a guy like you, I can talk to you and I can say, tell me what's going on. And you know the police talk.
Yeah.
Or the proceed, like, here's what's really going on. Here's how the evidence gets from here to here to here. Here's probably what they did. Here's probably what they should have done. Here's where they cut corners. I mean, you know, sort of the ins and outs of it.
Yeah. And listen, we've had cases, and I think we could probably think of a couple off the top of our head where I'll look at the discovery or you will have already reviewed it and maybe not shared your opinion. And I look at it and I say, they did it right.
Yeah.
There's nothing, they did it right. But there's also the cases where we look at it and it's easy to pick out procedural or policy violations. It could be due to searches or just how an arrest was made. It could be something really simple.
Yeah.
And I think somebody without law enforcement experience or a lengthy criminal defense experience, you miss that. You miss those things unless you really look at it.
Yeah. And what I like to look, there's a, we talk about this all the time in cases we prepare. There's this idea of confirmation bias.
Yep.
And I like to be unburdened by all my wisdom and experience, because what happens is on my end, and lawyers listen to it, criminal defense lawyers that are just starting, listen to me here. You don't know every damn thing. You don't. And you think you do. And you think that you got it, man, because you're the gunslinging trial lawyer and you can go into court and do it all. And you, oh yeah, rape, I've done this before. And I've done, and whether it's experienced or just starting out or somewhere in the middle, I see attorneys screw this up all the time. And I, at some point in my career, realized I don't know every damn thing. And even if I do think I know every damn thing, I don't know every damn thing. And the way we work together, I try to unburden myself of my own wisdom. Meaning, I think I got it, and then you and I will sit down and review a case, and you've got insight that I hadn't even thought about. And it's the ego of trial lawyers is such a paradox, right? Because we have to have giant egos. On the other hand, that holds us back.
Well, and I think that's just the perspective, right? So criminal defense attorneys in general are taught through schooling and experience to argue things legally, but they often lack the perspective of the real world, how it got from point A to point B.
Yeah.
And they can't overlook the legal perspective, the legal argument perspective.
Yeah, let's sort of take a case example without using the name. There was a case that a potential client called me, and you know, I have a different way of things, and I sit down with my client and I basically went through what I thought the case, I answered his questions about the procedure. I went through what I thought the case was about, and this case had probably 15 witnesses, potential witnesses, maybe more. And I said, look, the first thing I would do is hire my investigator. And then I would do something later called a focus group. I mean, I would do all the, I just outline what I would do. I don't hold it back because, look, if somebody wants to steal my playbook, have at it.
Absolutely.
And this is a story that's going to highlight that. The guy didn't hire me probably because of the money. He probably found somebody cheaper. And I disclosed that I work with you regularly.
Okay.
And you got hired by the other lawyer to do the case. And it was a different experience.
It was.
And I'm not faulting this other lawyer necessarily, or maybe I don't know. But it sort of highlighted the difference between how you and I work together and how a lot of attorneys work with investigators. So I'm going to have you describe that process.
Yeah. So I know exactly the case you're referencing. And I think in some regards, it comes down to finances, right? I think there are some attorneys who want to keep all of the money for themselves, right? The client pays the attorney and the attorney wants to keep that and limit the resources that they pull in to do the case any justice, right? And I think this goes back to what we said earlier. They know it all and they can argue everything on a legal basis.
Yep.
They miss so many of the things that are in the weeds by doing that.
Yep.
In this case in particular.
Actually, let's do it this way. Let's start by a generic case. If a case came in, how would it work in my office? And then we'll talk about how it worked in the other office.
Yeah. So generally in your office, and I'm not privy to some of the front end, but I believe you have a sort of a consultation.
And sometimes you're at that.
And sometimes I am. That's fair. So you'll do a consultation. You'll explain exactly how you work, sort of what the expectations are. You get a baseline understanding of the case. And then what I love about working for you is you say, Scott, here's the case. And you share the information that can be shared. And I get to run with it. I get to review it, analyze it, bounce things off the wall, and then track down any potential leads.
And it's not just like, maybe it's more like TV than it is not. I don't know. It's not just that, hey, go interview this guy.
Right. Yeah, very few instances working with you specifically have you given me a directive, go interview this person and then report back.
And because you have and look, anybody who doesn't understand this is missing the boat. And
yes.
In the other case that we're talking about, it sort of exemplifies this. I give Scott all the discovery, sometimes before I've even read it.
Yeah.
And I say, just get through this and let me know your thoughts on the case. And then I'll do the same thing. And then we'll sort of coordinate later. And there's insight that you have this knack. And I guess it's probably your police experience, maybe part of just who you are, finding these little details and finding these little things. And sometimes they don't mean anything, and sometimes they mean everything. But
Absolutely. But
we don't let you never leave a stone unturned when we put the team together like we like to do it.
Absolutely.
And even beyond that, you know, you even get involved with me in trial prep.
Yeah, trial prep. We have a lot of conversation with a lot of different experts, whether it's DNA, digital forensics, ballistics in a couple of the cases we've had. What I like is that you and I are on the same page the vast majority of the time in regards to the flow of the case, the status of the case, what we need, what we don't have, what we've looked at and it just doesn't exist. I think we're sort of in lockstep from the time the case comes in the door the time it's done.
And I think the other case, the case we're talking about, we keep bouncing back with this, the case we're talking about, it wasn't that way. Explain that experience. And I'm not saying that was wrong, but it's just not how I like to roll.
Yeah, so this case specifically involved many juveniles were involved in this case. And the directive from the attorney was, you know, like you said, there was a list of at least 15 potential witnesses. But the directive was, I need you to interview these two people. And so I look at the case the same way I do with any case that I get. I got most of the discovery, not all of it. I reviewed and analyzed everything that I had, and I realized that the scope should be much bigger in order to be thorough. Sort of communicated that back to the attorney, but the directive, the ask was to interview these two people.
And nothing more.
And nothing more.
And in fact, don't do any more.
Correct.
I find, to me, that's just a misuse of a very valuable resource.
I believe in that circumstance, I was only looped in because the client had already spoken to you and knew that
right.
A person like me existed that would be involved.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, maybe... It's an interesting point you're making here. So I'm not saying I always do it right, and I'm not saying I'm the best. I just know how I do it.
Yeah.
And in that situation, I think the client liked that approach, or my approach, which would be, I even told him, I said, listen, if I could, I would get Scott Shepard here today, and he would start today. Yeah. And he would go out there. I don't care what witnesses the prosecutor is going to call. I want to know who the witnesses are, and can we identify them ourselves, and will they talk to us?
Well, and I'll add this, the benefit is not only finding things that are helpful to us, but when you talk to everyone who could potentially be involved that a prosecutor could put on a stand or not, is we learn the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yep.
You can't fight what you don't know. So if you have an idea of what a witness is going to say, you sort of have the upper hand because you can work to combat that before you confront it.
Yeah, and then you can get a full fact. So it's sort of like... It's probably maybe before your time. When I was in high school, if we had to do a research paper, that I learned to do it like the really, really old-fashioned way. You get these little note cards, 3x5 note cards, and you go research every topic you can. You write down what the information you learned from a certain book or resource, and on the back you would put the citation for that thing. And then you would have this huge stack, And then you would start to sort the stack and you would say, all right, so this is about, I remember doing one on the ancient Olympics. I was like, all right, so this is about the origin of the Olympics. Here's what the games were. Here's what this was and whatever I was trying to make. And then from there, you make an outline and then you have all the research. You can pull it all together. But I didn't go into the research thinking I'm only going to learn this.
Right.
You read something and then you pop to, and that's like, oh, that's interesting. I wonder what that's about. And then we pop to that. We had a conversation last night on the way home. Both of us, you talked to my client.
I did.
So tell me about that. Do you always talk to the client? I don't even know if other people do that.
So yes and no. I mean, there's not a clear cut answer on that. So if we have a client that is incarcerated, I will not talk to that client outside of the attorney's presence, only because the same confidentiality does not extend to me because I'm just a civilian.
Yeah.
However, if I do a jail visit with an attorney, that conversation is protected. So generally an incarcerated client, I do not make an effort to contact them on my own. A client who's out on bond, it's pre-indictment, things like that. Absolutely. I'll talk to the client because, listen, we don't always get the full story the first time we talk to a client.
Right.
They don't always tell you everything. First contact, they may not tell me everything. But the more comfort they can find in conversing with me, they start to divulge more information, which is always helpful, again, in finding all of the facts that matter.
Yeah, I have found that when I interview a client, particularly in a first interview, it's really, and this is not a criticism of the client. I think more it's a criticism of, not even a criticism, it's an observation of what they are going through. Knocking on or calling a lawyer, showing up at an office, sitting down. I try to be pretty disarmed. I mean, I don't wear the fancy suits and I don't have marble and crap everywhere. I don't play that game. So I try to be pretty informal about it, but it's still a lot of deer in the headlights type stuff.
Absolutely.
And you're going to tell the stranger your deepest secrets. And I've sort of understood that I can't get all that out. Certainly not in the first meeting, and maybe not even in five meetings. Yeah. But I can say, listen, I want you to talk to Scott. Go through all the details with him. It's usually outside the office in a different setting.
Their house.
Their house.
They all go to their house. Yeah.
Yeah. And we can start to really put the picture together. And then you and I both will end up talking to that person later. And it's sort of the relationship of all. I think it's a comfort level for the clients.
I think it is too. Listen, Liam Neeson's line, I think that's his name, I have a particular set of skills.
Right. Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
So some of that is I'm just a guy, right? I'm just a guy who is good at this thing. And so when I go talk to people, I'm not talking to them. I don't, you know, convey myself as an expert or law enforcement. Like I'm as unscary as a person can be.
Yeah.
And I'm just a guy that wants to know all the details because I want to see how I can help them, right?
And then you can come back and then you and I share what we learned.
Yeah.
And we start to put strategies together.
Absolutely.
And in the case, back to the case example we're talking about, to me, that is an integral part of what I do. And this is, like, I've worked with investigators over the years and the good ones are few and far between. I mean, I've had people that just interview witnesses and that's all they will ever even think that they want to do. I've had some that are great at giving me, I get these little dossiers of people's backgrounds, yeah, which is really just like a Lexis People Search or one of those places. And maybe they've done some other like deeper dive and that has its value. It certainly does. But I think that the real benefit is when you and I and our team can sit down and not just have witness interviews, but talk about what we're going to do with them and what Absolutely. It means and what the defense strategy is going to be based on. Like after we've got all the note cards, after we've got everything there, now we have to put it together.
Yeah. Well, and listen to that example. We have another case currently, and there are a couple points. We've had several trial prep sessions. We talk about this case regularly, and there are a few key points within that case that you, myself, Mark, that we sort of have a different opinion on.
Yep.
And we go round and round, and, you know, there's a couple of them that we've all sort of gotten on the same page, and there's still one or two that are outstanding that we don't just talk about it once and say, well, this is how we'll approach it and this is how we'll argue it and like that's it, right?
Yeah.
It's a continuing conversation, and the more we talk about it, the more things fall into place and we figure out how it sort of aligns with the theme of the rest of the case. So, you know, if you look at something once and you decide, well, this is what it is and this is how I'm going to approach it, then you know, you're not open to considering.
Yeah. You're closing out everybody else's ideas.
Absolutely.
And lawyers do this crap. And it drives me batty. It drives me batty. I got this. I know what to do. I don't need your opinion on this case that we're talking about because I'm the lawyer, damn it. I know what I'm doing. Right. And don't tell me my strategy. I've done this before. You know, you never met a guy. There was a guy named Bill Meeks. He was my mentor. I've talked about him on the show before probably. But I walked into his office as a young whippersnapper in 1995-ish. Or no, even before that, 92-ish.
Okay.
I was a first year in law school, and he was working on a big case. It was a media case, and nationally known media case. And I came on that summer as a law clerk, and I got to work on that case. And I was petrified of the man, I mean, at first, right? But I quickly found he's really a disarming guy. And I remember late at night at one of the attorney's houses, we were doing prep sessions or whatever, and I sheepishly sort of spoke up, and I was thinking to myself, who in the F am I?
Right.
To even offer anything here. I know nothing. But he stopped and he looked at me and he goes, no. I'm not going to use the name of the other lawyer. He goes, no. Sure. What do you mean by that? And I told him, he goes, that's interesting. And then whatever I was talking about, and I'll tell you what I was talking about. It had to do with whether one of the key witnesses couldn't remember the address where he was driving that day or something like that. Like when he went to the police, he couldn't remember the address. And they were going to use it to impeach the guy. Like he was lying about where he was going or something.
Okay.
And I remember just thinking, oh, I don't know. I don't think that's that big a deal. And they were like, one lawyer's like, yeah, whatever. What do you know? You're 20. You know, what the hell do you know? And then, but Meeks just said, no. What do you mean? I said, well, look, I drove over here. And this is before GPS, right? There's nothing you punch in on your phone.
Triptychs. You were still using the AAA.
I mean, it was like, go I-70 East, get off at, it was a house in Bexley. Get off here, go this way on this road, turn left, and then you'll be there. And I said, I drove here, and you guys gave me the address. I don't remember it.
Yeah.
If I were asked right now, I would probably get the road, but I wouldn't remember the address. And everybody's like, yeah. And Meeks was like, yeah, good point. You know, let's be careful with this. Let's not overplay that hand. And I saw him repeat something similar. Like he never discounted an opinion based on the identity of who was giving it.
Yeah.
And he was very, very, he had every right to be elitist, and he was the best of the best. He was probably among the best that's ever walked the earth. He's deceased as far as trial lawyering, but he never treated people that way, and he was open to everything. And I think maybe I just am sort of, part of it's your background, I think, and upbringing, but I've never been that way, and you're not either.
No, I'm certainly not, and that's one of the things that I appreciate about you. You know, we've worked together for five, almost 6 years at this point. And our first case was a big one.
Right? It was a really big one.
Of the blue and it was
actually, you called
case.
Me.
I think I sent you a postcard, maybe. Either way,
yeah.
We made contact 5.5 or so years ago, and it was a big case, and we were victorious. But I noticed pretty quickly that you were open to all of the conversations.
Yeah.
And that's not my experience across the board. You know, I work with other attorneys who I would say are really good, but different.
Different, yeah. And I just think your skill set and to utilize an investigator properly lets you do what you do, man. Like, let him go. Like, go do what you're going to do and then listen, because we are skewed. We are burdened by all the nonsense, all how great we think we are, all our experience, all the things that we think we know, all our wisdom. Those are burdens. You have to use them as, they can be strengths, but if you let them, they'll be problems. And you can come in fresh and just say, look, here's what's going on out here. This is this.
Yeah.
So anyway, let's talk. Actually, we'll keep it going. Then I'm going to shift gears and ask you some other questions, but you, you actually appear in trials with us.
I do.
And what's your thought on that role? I mean, you know, in that case we're talking about, it was down in Hocking County, and you were there in trial. And I will say this, I don't think we could have done it the same without you there. And I mean that. I mean, you knew the evidence, you knew the videos, you knew, like, you had it down to the second on some of those things.
Yeah, so I think the role during trial, so, you know, just to sort of outline the steps, we have the case intake, the investigation, and then we go into the focus groups and then the trial prep to use all of the information that we've compiled up to that point. Once trial starts, right, the focus is on you, and I have no problem just being the guy in the background that tries to make everything work. So I think in that trial, I ran the video for you, right? So we had all the video clips ready to go. And so I ran the video.
But it's not just that you ran the video. You knew the clips.
I knew the clips.
And that means you knew the case.
Yes.
And you knew when the witness... See, the great part of this is that because you knew all that stuff, and we had it, we had some idea of where the witness was going to be reticent, we'll say.
But, well, and we knew because I reached out to the witness.
Because you had
a conversation that she didn't want to have.
Yeah, exactly.
But we had it, and I think we got a lot of insight from it. Had we not done that, we don't know where she is come trial time in terms of what she's going to offer or say.
And then you're flat-footed.
You're flat-footed.
So any lawyers who's tried a case understands this. You get a witness who says something that's different, and you know somewhere in the file you can impeach her because she has said it this way at this time. And worse yet, in today's day and age, it might even be video. And worse, because you can't just scan through it. I mean, you're sitting there, we're getting ready to cross-examine this witness, and you don't, it was a minute blank, second blank, sure. This witness said blank. You can't do that on the fly.
No.
You can't do that on the fly. So you were able to do that for us maybe 15 times in that case?
A lot. There was a lot of body cam. A lot of people were interviewed by law enforcement. There's a lot to go through on the front end in order to be able to prepare when it comes trial time.
And have it mastered.
And you've got to have it figured out.
Yeah. And you did in that case. And that's a skill set that I cannot, the value of that in a trial is immeasurable. So that girl, let's play it out in that case. If Mark was doing Mark said he's been here actually. We did a show recently, but we tried the case together. He's a great lawyer in Michigan, Mark Satawa. And he was cross-examining this key witness. And she was she did her direct examination and left out about 2/3 of what really happened.
Absolutely.
And Mark stands up and he starts asking her questions and she starts denying things that we knew to be wrong. Like she was just lying.
Yep.
And because you had done the workup, we had done the workup and we had talked about the workup, we had it prepared in advance. If we didn't, it goes completely different. So didn't you tell the cops this? No.
Right.
And what are you going to do? Ask for a recess every question to try to cue it up? You can't do that.
No, you can't. Yeah, and in those moments, because I had talked to her as well, and not only was she leaving stuff out, but she was giving a bit of a different narrative than what she shared with me. So you've got two different stories, generally similar, but with very different details that make a difference. And so not only having analyzed her original statements to law enforcement, but then having the conversation myself. So you've got like a multi-faceted approach here. Like now you have different stories. We have recordings of all of it. And we had those clips ready to pull up to call her out should she have told a different story or denied something.
And you can't, as a trial lawyer perspective, if you take a swing at doing what we did there, that is finding clips, playing them for her, asking it, well, look, I mean, you just said blank or X. I'm going to show you this clip where you were talking to the police about the same thing and you said Y. So is it X or is it Y? Now there's different, it's a whole clinic on how to do that with a witness, and Mark did it brilliantly in that case. But if you take a swing at trying to do that and you fail, it is disaster.
Absolutely.
Like if you try to cue up a thing and you're wrong or you miss it, even though you know it exists, but you can't find it, you look like a moron.
Absolutely.
And the pressure's on, you start to sweat and the jury's looking at you and you're just like, you know, you're missing the mark, and it's a not just a missed opportunity. It might be a lost case.
Absolutely. Yeah. Some of those are really hard to come back from.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think some of it in a criminal court, some of it in these hard cases where it could go one way or the other, it often falls on which attorney, the prosecutor or the defense attorney, does the jury trust the most?
Yeah.
Right. If they can't decide on the evidence alone, they're unsure. It could really go either way. Which one of these people in suits arguing the case do they trust the most?
Yeah, who's got the credibility?
And if you swing and you miss and you sort of have a blunder, it's oftentimes hard to come back from.
It's hard to come back from. So really, it's more like, I don't know what, maybe it's more like what people think a private investigator is. I'm thinking, you ever watch The Lincoln Lawyer?
I have.
Mickey Haller. I read a couple of the books, but you know, he's got that guy. That, by the way, I don't like that character. The investigator and that guy, I understand what they try to do with it, but the guy just doesn't look like an old biker.
No, and listen, when it comes to movies and TV in general, I don't know why the investigator is often like this sort of sleazy, untrustworthy looking guy.
Or guy with a beard and glasses and a hat on.
Or looks just like me in some right. circumstances. Yeah. Absolutely.
But he's sort of missing. But on the other hand, it's not what, when we work together, it's not unlike that. I mean, that guy's out there just doing stuff, figuring stuff out. And it doesn't happen in real time the way TV portrays it.
No.
But, you know, I don't keep, I just say, listen, go figure out what you can figure out. And you're not just figuring stuff out.
Yeah.
And I don't think I think a lot of lawyers underuse, well, either they don't have an investigator who's capable of doing it, or they underuse that investigator, and maybe both.
Yeah. Well, and I'll say another benefit, like oftentimes I'll talk to a witness that's documented in a report the police have identified. But what you find is you talk to that person and they say, well, Jimmy was also here.
Oh, Jimmy.
Well, Jimmy's not in the report anyway, right? Or whoever. But that person's not listed anywhere. So here's another perspective that's not even been brought into the case. And what is that perspective? Is it helpful? Is it harmful? Is it somewhere in between? We don't know. Unless a person like me has the freedom to track them down and ask them.
And a great example, we're working on a case we're going to try in a couple of months. That happened.
Absolutely.
We go check the place where this initially starts, and it turns out there's two other people there that the police don't know anything about.
Yeah.
So I guess it's really twofold. One, we want to know what the police know. Maybe more than two, maybe three. I'll just list them. I want to know what the police know. So I want to go interview their witnesses, and I don't want to take the police word for it in their summaries or even the witnesses' written statements or even their audio statements, because witnesses are usually just going to answer the questions they're asked. And I'm here to tell you that 9 times out of 10, the police aren't there to help the defense.
Correct.
Sometimes they are, but most of the time they're not. Most of the time they're going to say, we're just trying to find the truth, et cetera. There's a reason there's two sides.
Absolutely.
Right. So, and I don't even fault them for it. It's their, you know,
it's their job.
Yeah. It's, you know, should they be out there be trying to find the actual truth? They go in with a bias. Why? Because they're human.
Yep.
And they're cops.
Yep.
So I want to ask our questions and sort of make sure there's not more. Sometimes it spins off other witnesses, like what we talked about, and we're doing stuff the police didn't even dream of doing.
Absolutely.
And that's where the gold is, man. I mean, when we can bring in, when you find those witnesses in the case we're talking about, that really changes the whole narrative.
It does. It's not only two different perspectives, but it's two people who were there and observed what the police never even asked about.
Right,
so in that case, and I guess to maybe make it more clear to your viewers, is this incident started at a business and then moved somewhere else. The police investigation only started at the somewhere else and never went back to the business. So there is the first segment, if you will, of this case that was not even considered. It only started from the allegation on and not what led up to it.
Right. Yeah. And the witnesses we're talking about are not aligned with the defense.
No.
These are independent people and they changed the outcome. They changed the narrative of the case and probably the outcome of the case.
I think so.
And it's that kind of insight. So when defense lawyers rely only on what they are doing or what the police have given them or what the prosecutor's given us, you're swimming in shark infested waters, maybe is the way to say it. I mean, it's dangerous ground. You're leaving on the table huge potential for downside and upside. Yeah. Downside, of course, being, like you said, and we've talked about this all the time. I can help my client, I can protect my clients from the stuff I know about, not the stuff I don't. Yeah. And if you don't know about it, I hear this all the time. Well, we didn't want to do an investigation because we're going to get bad information. Then what happens at trial when the bad information comes out? Then what are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, listen, we've had cases where one case that we've referenced, you know, the stippling marks or like the powder burn from a gunshot was a point of, I don't want to say emphasis, but it was important, right? Because it gave the range of which this shooting may have happened. We had a ballistics guy that we hired that came and we went and we tested the firearm.
Yep.
The firearm.
The actual
gun. From the evidence room.
Yeah.
We had another case that was up north and there were some allegations and it didn't pan out, but we did a lot of work in the front end and we went and got video that the police had not requested as part of their investigation.
Yep. We're getting video from fast food place that the police had no idea about.
Absolutely.
Right? Yep.
Right. In this case that we're talking about, you know, we found these other witnesses at the business and the business was not even part of the police's investigation.
Right.
So like it's not only validating or verifying or following up on what is presented as part of the investigation, but it's doing all the other things that they maybe didn't do that could be important.
Yeah. And then whatever that is, who knows? We figured out as
every
we go.
Every case is different.
Yep. Yep. And then, when we work together, I like to have you, if I could have you at every single initial interview, maybe not every single, sometimes it might be off-putting for a client, but most of the time, as early as possible, talking to my client, typically the family members who have some knowledge about what's going on. And then you start to expand the sphere of folks. And then we regroup, go through the discovery, and we get a game plan together like, all right, who do we want to interview outside all of that? And do we want to talk to this person? Will they talk to us? Well, let's at least try. You've helped me identify experts. Yeah. In fact, you've given me the notion that we even need experts sometimes that I didn't even think about.
Yeah.
Because we're not gods, right? You know, trial, we don't know every damn thing. And getting more opinions is always better than less. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that, yeah, there have been instances where I may suggest an expert of one type or another. And sometimes we don't use them. Sometimes we do. Sometimes we consider it, and it turns out not to be right. So I, much like you, I get to be wrong sometimes too. So,
yeah, exactly.
So, right. So you're really building me up, but it's not to go. I don't want to go so far to say that all of my ideas or insights
of course not.
Are always accurate, but
of course not.
But they're ideas and insights that I think open up a greater conversation about whatever that fact or that point is.
Yeah,
that's the important part.
That's the point we're trying to make. The last meeting we had with Mark was down here, and we were talking about this case, and the three of us. So look, you were part of a conversation with the attorneys preparing to cross-examine a key witness as the investigator. So there are lawyers out there thinking, well, that's not the investigator's job. I'm the lawyer. I know everything. But in the course of that, the three of us, the sum of the three parts was bigger than just those three parts. And you had ideas that we didn't like. I had ideas that you guys didn't like. Maybe Mark had ideas that I didn't like or
most
you didn't
of
like. And most of yeah, right, exactly.
Sorry, Mark.
Yeah, yeah. But the point was, it's a laboratory environment where nobody is wrong. They're just ideas.
Yeah.
And from that, you can make progress. And I think we all left that prep session thinking we got it.
Yeah.
We got it. And I've done that by myself before, and it wouldn't have been as good.
Well, and I think a greater point is we didn't start the prep session thinking we've got it.
Right? Correct. In fact, it's quite the opposite.
Some major sticking points.
Yeah.
But by the time we were done, I think you're right. I think we all left saying,
we got
this
it.
Is different. We've got it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And we may not win the case. I don't know. But we figured out what we needed to
Absolutely.
Do, and we were reasonably assured that it was the best way to go because it's been vetted. It's been discussed. That's how you prepare for trials. Generally speaking. All right, let's shift gears.
Yes.
You've gone out. I think everybody's curious, like, how shady does it get when you're out on the streets? Do you have guns? Like, what's it like? Is there shootouts? What's going on out there?
I've not been shot at in this role. I was confronted on the front porch when I was trying to conduct an interview for another attorney in another case. And I was met on the front porch with a handgun wielding.
Oh, pointed at you.
Not pointed, but ready.
Ready.
Out and ready. And it's fine. I mean, it's okay. Ignorance is bliss sometimes. You know, I like to think that I'm sort of always prepared, like environmentally aware of what I'm walking into. So I'm not so naive that I just walk into a scenario.
Yeah. And you strike a pretty broad presence too. I mean, you're tall, you've got, right. You know, you don't look like somebody that you can just go screw with.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, I've not had any really crazy run-ins. So I'm not overly pushy. If somebody says they don't want to talk, then okay. That just means you don't want to talk today, but I'll try again.
Yeah. How do you deal with that, Todd? Because not everybody wants to talk. We go into these things often. I would say go interview this alleged victim of the case. I'm like, they're probably never going to talk. But then you're able to get them to talk.
Sometimes. And again, I play stupid a lot. Like I may have gone through every detail of the case and know it very well, but I play stupid, right? I just need you to help me. Help me understand.
Yeah.
Like, I've looked at this stuff, and it's on paper, and I just can't make it make sense. Can you help me understand what you meant when you said this? And so even when they say they don't want to talk, the human nature is that people in general want to be helpful. And so if I'm the ignorant guy who just needs help understanding, even if I've had individuals say that they don't want to talk. I have nothing to say. I don't want to say anything to you. And I'll sort of cut them off and do my ignorant line. And next thing you know, we're talking for an hour.
Yeah, having coffee.
And we've like discussed all of it. So it doesn't always work, but I play that one a lot. Like, I just need to understand.
Well, and it's not necessarily a lie. I think that at least when I've interviewed witnesses as the defense lawyer, we should talk about why I don't like to do that. But when I've had to do that in the past, I have sort of found that the other side doesn't understand that. Sometimes, now if it's a victim and they hate each other, sometimes there's nothing you can do.
Right.
But a lot of times people just don't trust the defense side. They don't trust what I'm trying to do. And maybe for good reason, I don't know. But yeah. Typically I found when I just try to say, look, man, I just want to know what happened. I'm not going to trick you here. I'm just this, you know, I'm normal. Trust me, maybe. Right. He's a no good, rotten, lying lawyer. First, kill all the lawyers. But anyway, it's... from your side, from your perspective, that's even easier to do.
Yeah. And I think a big part of it, I don't try to be sneaky oftentimes. Sometimes I do. Most of the time, I don't try to be sneaky. When I reach out to somebody on the phone or I knock on their door, generally I tell them exactly who I am, exactly who I'm working with or for. And I tell them, which is true. I'm not here to make anybody guilty or innocent. Like, as a matter of fact, I don't care. I'm just out to find the facts.
And that is true.
And that is true.
In fact, if you're out there only to try to find the good stuff, that would bother me.
Exactly. Absolutely.
Because then you're suffering from the same confirmation bias that I might.
Absolutely.
And the idea you get to come in there and say, look, just tell me what the hell happened.
Yeah. And so I, you know, you've listened to my interviews, some of them that I've recorded, and I tell most everybody that. I just need to know what the facts are. And wherever they land is where they land. I'm not going to change them. I'm not here to change. I just need to know what they are.
Yeah.
Is what you told the police true? Or is there something different? Oh, there's something different. Let's talk about
it. Or even more, right?
Or what did you leave out? So I think when I throw all of that at these people up front, they understand generally that I'm not there to trick them.
Yeah.
And I really just want to know. And if that doesn't work, then I really lean heavily on the.
Then you go back to
I'm so ignorant that I just need your help.
Yeah. Or yeah, you go back to the trickery.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So what's the? You know, you expand your practice. Where are you going from here?
It's a great question. I've been trying to figure it out for about 3.5 years now.
I got you.
You know, it's one of those things, and I like to think that I do good work. You seem to think that I do good work, which I appreciate. Good work leads to more work,
yeah.
And when there's more work, there's less time to figure out what the next step is.
That's right. The growing pains are hard.
I could use another person, even if it's for the administrative stuff, that could take that off my plate. But one problem is I don't trust anybody.
Well, and look, running a small business, we need to hook you up with Glenn in my account, because
yeah.
We talk about this all the time. Running a small business, you're at that phase where it's the hardest part. Like you're getting to the point where it can't just be you.
Yeah.
But it has to be just you. You know, it's like you're in that.
Yeah.
And I got the same problem.
Well, and the tricky part is that it's a small business in a very like niche market, right?
Yeah.
So I've sent out thousands of postcards and cold calls and things like that early on. And the majority of the attorneys that I work with have heard of me from another attorney.
Yeah.
So not the postcard or the call or knocking on their door. It's because another attorney has said, hey, this guy's good.
Yeah.
And so then they call me and then they tell somebody else. So it's all word of mouth. Well, as we all know, good news travels fast, but bad news travels far faster.
Yeah.
So if I show up or don't show up and do something poorly for you or for someone else, you know, the attorney community is going to hear about that far quicker than if I'm doing a great job.
Yeah.
Once they hear that, then the phone stops ringing and the jobs start coming in. And next thing you know, I don't need another person anymore.
Yeah. Well,
so there's a lot of focus on the work.
And the problem, you know, running any business, we're in the service business.
Yeah.
This is what we do. Yeah. And if I employ an associate and say, look, I'm going to put Joe on it, and Joe's not me.
Yeah.
Now, Joe may be great, but he's not me. And people say, I wanted you. Mm-hmm. I didn't want Joe. So it's hard. It's very difficult, and maybe there's a way to offload some of it. Maybe there's not. It's a difficult thing, you know. Particularly in our type, it's very personal.
It is very personal.
Yeah, and if you just said, "Look, I'm gonna have," if you just called me one day and said, "I got this new guy, I want you to work with him," I'd be like, "Ah, no, wait a minute, I got you."
Right? Exactly.
Yeah,
right?
We're the team here. We're the team.
Yeah.
Well, look, I think with that, tell us how people get a hold of you. By the way, website.
So justifiedinvestigations.org is the website. You can email me if you have specific questions about investigation. You have a case that needs looked at, scott@justifiedinvestigations.org.
Yeah, be careful. You're going to get lots of emails.
I know. And that's investigations with an S, justifiedinvestigations.org.
Gotcha. All right. Well, look, well, thanks for coming in. We'll do more. What I want to do is maybe take a case study. Like, we'll go beginning to end of everything we did. We talked about a few of them.
Yeah, it'd be fun.
But maybe the Hocking County case would be a good one to dig into.
Yeah.
And we can sort of do a series. But anyway, this is Scott Shepard here at Lawyer Talk, ongoing. I'll call it my guest series. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah.
We'll do more. We're off the record, on the air, off the record, on the air, at least until now. By the way, we're sponsored by Circle 270 Media. Phenomenal. If you've got a podcast that you want, if you're in the Central Ohio area, even nationally, great podcast consultant, check out Circle 270 Media. Brett over there will take care of you.